Good evening, Greg Barth back with another episode of Noir on the Radio. And joining me tonight is New York Times bestselling author Eric Van Lustbader. Eric Van Lustbader's first novel, The Sunset Warrior, was published in 1975. Since then, he has published more than 25 bestselling novels, including The Ninja, in which he introduced Nicholas Lanier, one of modern fiction's most beloved and enduring heroes, continuing his exploits in 5 subsequent bestsellers. His novels have been translated into over 20 languages. His books are bestsellers worldwide. Mr. Lustbader is also the author of 2 successful and highly regarded major fantasy series, The Pearl and The Sunset Warrior Cycle. He's also the author of Batman, The Dark Angel, which was the only graphic novel to be chosen as a monthly choice of the Quality Paperback Book Club. In 2003, he was asked by a estate of the late Robert Ludlum to continue the series based on Jason Bourne. The Bourne Legacy, published in 2004, continues and updates the adventures of Robert Ludlum's famous international assassin. And in 2008, Mr. Lustbader wrote First Daughter to wide acclaim. The second novel in the series, Last Snow, was published in January 2010. And the third novel in the series, Blood Trust, is published in May 2011. Eric Van Lustbader, welcome to Noir on the Radio. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you very much for having me, Greg. That was quite an introduction. I'm very impressed with my CV.
you've got quite a few books out and have been very successful, and you've been entertaining people like me for a long time. So it's great to have you on and to get to talk to you. If you would, Eric, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, experience, everything that that made you the writer that you are today?
Well, I don't know where to begin. I was born and raised in Greenwich Village in New York City, which was and actually still is a hotbed of creative people, artists, writers, sculptors, and I was exposed to that very early. My parents had a lot of artist friends. I went to a private elementary school where I learned how to research, how to write creatively, but really writing professionally is my third career. My first career was in the music business. I spent 10 years in the music business. Actually, that was my second. The first one was I spent 3.5 years as a teacher in the New York City public school systems. I have 2 licenses, an elementary school license and an early childhood license. Finally, the music business got too full of suits and people with abacuses. So I decided I wanted to write, and I've been writing all along in the music business, but I really wanted to write a novel. It turns out I met a friend of mine from high school, a nice Jewish boy from Brooklyn, who was writing westerns for Avon Books, and they were actually quite good. And I thought, well, if he can write a novel, so can I. And I wrote The Sunset Warrior, and I brought it. A friend of mine recommended an agent who is still my agent, Henry Morrison, and he loved them and sold them to Doubleday, and we were off and running. In 1979, I left the music business and started writing full time. My agent was very upset. He didn't think I could make enough money. But then I brought over the manuscript for the Ninja, and that just immediately exploded.
What a fascinating career you've had. Your latest release is Robert Ludlum's The Bourne Initiative, just out last month from Grand Central Publishing. How would you describe this novel for our listeners who may not be familiar with it yet?
Well, first of all, I can't believe it, but it's my 11th Bourne novel. Bob, my friend Bob Ludlum, wrote three. Never meant it to be a series at all. He wrote the Bourne Identity as a one-off, and it was so popular, so well received that his publishing company wanted to have him write a sequel right away, and he didn't. He waited about 5 years and then did the Bourne Supremacy. But I wrote the book last year before any of what's going on happened in America, and it's kind of prescient because it talks about one of the characters in it is a high-ranking administration official who is suborned into working for the FSB, which is the successor to the KGB, working for the Russians. And this was before the election, actually, last November. But I could sort of see which way the wind was blowing, and I was hoping against hope that Trump wouldn't become president, but I had a feeling that that's the way the world was going. And I was upset, but not terribly surprised. And so the book is very current now. I mean, it's kind of interesting that the book before that, the plot line has to do with Russia going into Syria as a feint to take world opinion away from their incursion into Ukraine. And that's exactly what happened 6 months after the book was published. So I just have a kind of a knack for extrapolating what's in the news, and I've been pretty successful at it over the years.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, you mentioned this is your 11th entry in the Jason Bourne series, which is
right.
A character by Robert Ludlum. How did you come to pick up this series as the author of it?
Well, Bob and I were friends. We met in 1980 when his book, The Bourne Identity, and my book, The Ninja, were both on the New York Times bestseller list. And it turned out that we shared an agent, Henry Morrison. And in those days, Henry would have about four times a year, he'd have parties for his authors, which were really wonderful get-togethers, and I'm really sorry he doesn't do it anymore. But in any case, in the summer of 1980, Henry had one of these parties, and I went to it, and he met me at the door, and he said, Bob Ludlum would like to meet you. And I was really surprised because Bob had a reputation of being kind of curmudgeonly and not being interested in talking with anybody. He was not very social at all. And I said, really? And he said, yeah, he read The Ninja and he loved it and he would like to talk to you. So he brought me over to Ludlum, who was sitting in a corner nursing a scotch. And I sat down and I was pretty intimidated by him. He was a big guy with a big booming voice. Because he used to be an actor and a stage producer before he went into writing novels. And it turned out we had tremendous number of things in common. We talked about our respective protagonists and how much of ourselves was wrapped up in them. We talked about how to create a really best-selling thriller. We talked about the fact we were both conspiracy theorists, and we both had connections in the clandestine communities. And so we had a lot to talk about. I mean, we sort of knew about the Iran-Contra thing before it happened. Not that we could write about it, but we knew about it. And we just became friends. I mean, he never came to my house and I never came to his house. I don't think anybody ever did that. But we stayed friends. And after his untimely passing, his estate, who was someone I knew, I was having lunch with him one day, and he said, "What are you going to write next?" And really, it was for the first time in my career, I didn't know. I felt kind of burned out on the books that I was doing, and I said, I don't know what. He said, "How'd you like to write a Jason Bourne novel?" And I said, "What?" And he said, "Well, the first film came out last year, and it did well, and it's become the number one DVD this year. So Universal decided they want to do another film, and I thought it would be a great idea to put out a new Jason Bourne novel every time a film came out." And I thought it was a brilliant idea. I still think it's a brilliant idea because you're piggybacking on, you know, $25 million of advertising and promotion, which, of course, in the book business you can't do. It's not just not on that scale.
Uh-huh.
And I said, "Well, look, I don't know. I have my own career." And he said, well, think about it." And I said, "Well, you know, I'm not going to do it if you want me to write in Bob's style." And he said, no, I want you to do it in your own style." And I said, "Well, okay, but, you know, I'm not a ghostwriter, so I would want my name on the book." And he thought about it for a minute, and he said, "Okay." And I said, "All right, let me think about it overnight." And I talked to my agent, who said, "Look, you know, if only do it if it's going to be fun, because you don't need the money, and just, you know, think about it." So I did. Woke up the next morning, took a shower, and these things always happen to me in water. I mean, I don't know what it is, whether it's a shower or pool or, you know, off the coast of Florida, wherever I am, I get my best ideas. And by the time I got out of the shower, I had the whole plot pretty much in my head of The Bourne Legacy, which was turned out to be the first book. And I said yes, and the books were so successful that after about, I think, three books or so, I knew Grand Central asked if I could do a book a year. And at first I sort of balked at that. That meant I would have to do two books a year, which I had never done before. And I tried it, and I've been doing it for 11 years. So I guess, I can do it. I mean, it's just one of those things. I'm not happy if I'm not, unless I'm away outside the United States, I'm not happy if I'm not writing. I'm the happiest guy alive when things are going well, and I'm, I was just writing about 2 minutes before you called, actually, having forgotten we were supposed to do this interview. So I'm just a self-professed workaholic, but I love it. So, thank God I work for myself, and because in my other careers, I couldn't work for anyone more than about 2.5 years. After that, I got bored, knew more than my bosses did, and was never a corporate kind of guy. I never wanted to climb a corporate ladder. So now I don't have to.
Well, that's great. Eric, have you found it difficult in any way to write characters that originated by another author?
Well, people always ask me that, I probably would with anyone else, but not with Bourne, because I knew him from talking with Barbara and reading the books. I knew him inside and out, and I had an affinity for the character the first time I read The Bourne Identity. I can't tell you why. It is. As a matter of fact, some years ago, the executor of Bob's estate asked me if I would revive one of Bob's other characters, and I said no. I don't know anything about the character. I don't have a feel for it. So get somebody else to do it. I think kind of in a macro way, which means that when I decided to do it, I didn't think about it as one book. I thought about it as a series, and I sat down with my agent and with the executive of the state, and I said, "Look, we have to make some changes because Bob never thought of Bourne being a serial character. So he was never, created that way." He was older because Bob was older. He got married in the second book. He had kids. They were always under threat. I said, "You can't keep doing that. It's just not good." He won't be able to interact with any female characters. There's always going to be a problem with the children being and his wife being under attack by his enemies. And I said also, you know, a lot of people, as popular as Bob's books are, there are going to be a ton of people coming to the books who never read the earlier ones, but know Bourne through the film. So the character has to be recognizable to them as well as his fans. So we, you know, I gave them a couple of ideas about tweaks. We, between my first and second book, we had his wife die in a skiing accident, and he shipped the kids off to her grandparents in northern Canada. And that was the end of them. And also in the Bourne Legacy, the three most most recognizable characters from Bob's books, including Alex Conklin, who was his field director at Treadstone, were in that book, but were killed in the first, you know, 15 pages. So people were used to those characters. They got killed off, and then everyone else from then on was my character. So it was I thought about having that transition from the old to the new, and now since then. I mean, the second book I did, The Bourne Betrayal, the executive of the state said to me, you know, Bourne's your character now. And a lot of people have said that, and it makes me feel really good. But I still feel Bob, you know, looking down over my shoulder, and I always ask him if he approves of everything I do, and so far he has. I mean, I just, there's nothing, I could not in my heart violate any of the main characteristics of that character that Bob set up. I just couldn't do it. I wouldn't want to do it. So I think at least that, and a ton of my fans think that Bourne is in good hands with me.
Yeah, you've certainly done Bob well with your continuation of the series. Now, I don't know if you've noticed this or not, Eric, but it's kind of cool to go into a bookstore and look at the Bourne novels on the shelves, because your name is similar enough to Ludlum's that the series by both authors are pretty much side by side on the shelves. And, you know, I suspect some listeners might go to the V section, but that would be the wrong shelf, right? Van is your,
right,
is your middle
would
name,
be, that would
as
be.
I understand.
There, you know, there was a point in my career when my previous publishers, convinced me to drop the Van, and I hated it because my parents named me Eric Van Lustbader. The Van is a middle name because I'm half Dutch and half Austrian. So the Lustbader, as you would say in Europe, is the Austrian family, part of the family. And the Van comes from the Dutch side, which is Van Blorkum. And they gave me that name. And I'm proud of it. And now every so often I still get an interview where they say Mr. Van Lustbader, but mostly not. I will say that there was some confusion in the first years, not about that, but about it's saying, you know, Robert Ludlum's The Bourne Betrayal, and there were people who came up to me and said, you know, you're writing this with Robert Ludlum. And I said, no, Bob died in 2003, and he didn't leave any manuscripts or any ideas or any titles behind whatsoever. But that's the way the estate and the publishing company wanted it. They wanted to keep Bob's name on the books, and I can't say that I blame them. It's his character. He created it, and so he deserves to have his name on the book alongside mine.
Sure. Now, I first knew you as the author of The Ninja back in the mid-80s. I was probably 13 or so, and my older brother had a copy of that book
that we both got into.
Well,
that makes me feel really old.
Oh, well, sorry about that. But that's, you know, that I've been reading, you know, your works for a long time. What would you like our listeners to know about the Nicholas Lanier Ninja series, if any are still unfamiliar with it?
Well, you know, the book really started the worldwide ninja craze. I mean, nobody in the States ever heard of the ninja of ninjas before that book came out. And I discovered them through my love of Japanese woodblock prints. There was a gallery called, it's still around, the Ronin Gallery, and the owners took me under their wing, and I would hang out there often and meet a lot of Japanese who were immigrating over to America and sort of hanging out there and getting acclimated. And one day I heard them talking about ninja, and I had no idea what they were, and I asked them, and they told me all about it. And I said, is there any books I can read? And they said, no, there are no books, no really real books on ninja. It's all because their lore is handed down from within the families from father to son. It's all oral. Nothing was ever written down. So anyone who says they're writing a book about ninja history is, you know, it's not correct. Anyway, I was immediately fascinated by it, and I thought, what would it be like if this agent of chaos was set down in the middle of Manhattan? And that's how I got the idea for the ninja, and actually wrote it over, didn't tell anyone, didn't tell my agent, wrote it over one summer. I had written three of the fantasy books, the Sunset Warrior books, and as far as he knew, the book manuscript I was handing him was another in that series, except I said to him, this is different, so read it with a different frame of mind. And I don't know, I guess about 2 weeks later, he called me back, and he said, this is a big book, and I misunderstood him. I said, well, I guess I can cut it. He said, no, that's not what I mean. He said, I think this is a big bestseller. And we took it to, in those days, there were many, many more publishers than there are now. And we took it to about, I don't know, I lost count, 10 or 11, 12 publishers. And they all turned it down. They thought it was too strange a book. Random House sort of gave a tepid offer, but their sub-rights person, the person who sold paperbacks in those days, thought it was too strange for wouldn't sell in paperback, but there was a small publisher called M. Evans who had flipped out over the book, and I kept putting them off because my agent told me that they had never done fiction before. They had mm-hmm. successfully published nonfiction, and I said, well, how are they going to publish the book? He said, just listen to what they have to say. He said, because in this business, you know, enthusiasm is 90% of the battle. So they took me to lunch, and much to my surprise, they opened up this portfolio of, they had gone to a Madison Avenue advertising company and had them work up a whole advertising and marketing campaign for the book, and it was brilliant. And I said right away, I said, okay, yeah, I'm on board, and I guess I could say the rest is history. I mean, it just word of mouth just it sold like wildfire all over the world.
I remember those days well because, you know, then we had the Chuck Norris movies and you know, everything. It was a ninja craze that you kicked off. And I know a lot of people my generation, they look back at just the magic of that era and enjoying that that kind of entertainment. So thank you for that.
Well, you're quite welcome.
I'd like to talk a little bit about the writing process. What does writing look like for you? Can you just describe a typical day for us?
Usually I'm writing in the morning, but as I just said to you, I'm doing a little bit in the, it just doesn't, I don't know. I mean, I write not by time, like, you know, I write, you know, 5 hours a day or whatever. I write between, if things are going well, I write between 5 and 6 pages a day. But I might do, one day I might do 1 page or 2 pages or 2 paragraphs, or some days it's just not happening. I have to, people have said my books seem cinematic to them, and that's because I can't write a scene unless I actually visualize it in my mind's eye. I've got to see that all the characters in the space they're inhabiting and what they're doing before I can write it. So I think that's where that cinematic quality comes from. But as far as anything else, all I can tell you is, you know, if you lined up 100 authors, they'd give you 100 different answers about their writing experience. I will say that I outline very lightly. Some people need, like I was told, Ken Follett, I think, has to have every scene outlined out before he starts a book. I can't do that. If I did that, I wouldn't write the book because I'd be too bored. I'd know everything that happens. My books happen organically. There are characters that I thought would be minor characters who have pushed themselves to the forefront and become major characters. Why that happens, I don't know. It's kind of a magical experience, and one of the reasons why I love writing and never get bored with it. I'm on the dyslexia scale, very low down, but I do have dyslexia, and one of the qualities of dyslexia is that your mind runs at a very, very high rate of speed, and so I tend to get bored very easily. And well, people then say to me, well, you know, if you're bored that easily, how could you write 11 Bourne novels? Well, each one is, Bob created a character so unique and so wonderful because he doesn't have a past, so you can keep creating things out of his past that you wouldn't be able to do with a normal character, because by the fourth or fifth book, if you brought in a character from your protagonist's past, you know, your readers would say, well, how come we didn't know about this sooner? But they can't say that with Bourne because he doesn't remember. So to me, that he's created a character that's endlessly fascinating for me and has an endless amount of creativity built into the character, which suits me to a T.
That is a pretty rich place to be with that character. What entertains you, Eric? What are you reading currently, listening to, watching for entertainment these days?
Well, let's see. I mean, I love the Fargo series. I read constantly. I read for research, but I also read for pleasure because it stimulates my mind. And currently, I'm reading the newest book by a guy I met a couple of years ago at the Los Angeles Festival of Books, and I've been a longtime fan of his. His name is Philip Kerr. And he writes about he writes historical fiction about World War II. This guy, Bernie, is an ex-detective who gets dragooned into working for some high-level Nazis. And he's, even though he's not a party member, hates the Nazis. It's a very interesting series, and I'm reading the new book now called Prussian Blue, which is really fascinating. And each book illuminates a period, either right before the war, this takes place in 1939, but or during the war or right after the war. I tend to read, I don't read thrillers. I tend to read a lot of female authors. Emily St. John Mandel is one of them, one of my favorites. I just read constantly. I'm like a little machine that goes through books like crap through a goose. That's basically it. I could give you some more names, but
interesting.
I don't think it's necessary.
What new and exciting projects are you working on these days that we can look forward to in the near term?
About a couple of years ago, I talked to my. I have an ebook publisher that do my older the Ninja series and whatever in ebooks, and there have been so much clamor among my fans to revive Nicholas Lanier, and I've resisted it for a long time because Japan has been so out of the world spotlight for so long that it was hard to think of topical. You know, thrillers have to be topical in order to work, and it was difficult to think of him in that situation currently. But I decided to try doing a couple of short stories with Nicholas, and they were tremendously successful. There are two of them out, and I'm working on a third one. I'm also working on the 12th Bourne novel called The Bourne Nemesis. I have another series that is going to conclude a couple of years from now that stars Bravo Shore in he's a kind of the head of a lay order that's involved in mystical antiquities, and so the latest book that of his that just came out was called The Fallen, and next year will be the second book in that. I mean, the first book was The Testament, which was a huge book that was about 5 years ago, and then I did this first of three sequels. So The Fallen was out this year. Next year will be something called The Four Dominions, and the year after that will be a book called The Sum of All Shadows.
Wow.
But otherwise,
I'm
free
stuff.
To do much, do anything you want. That is, if I don't sleep.
Well, that's a lot of good stuff to look forward to. I can tell you're very busy. Well, Eric,
One thing I forgot to mention. I was asked by the people in my organization called the International Thriller Writers to co-write a story in this latest anthology called Matchup, and I co-wrote a story with J.A. Jantz in that anthology, which also just came out. Coincidentally, it came out the same day as the Bourne Initiative. I don't know how that happened, but... yes, I've been extremely, extremely busy and continue to be, happily.
I love the concept of that anthology. I'm sure that's a lot of fun to work with other writers.
Yes, male writers teaming up with female writers, thriller writers. It was a fascinating. The book is just great, and all the stories in it are really wonderful. And mine happens to one of the stars is Bravo Shore. So it's like a bridge between the Testament and this new book, The Fallen.
Nice. Well, Eric Van Lesbetter, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking to us about your work. I mean, literally at a moment's notice, it's been a blast.
Well, it's been my pleasure.
I'm glad we got the chance to do this. And for the listeners, you know, take a look at it. Eric Van Lesbetter's latest, The Bourne Initiative, available everywhere. And this podcast is sponsored by Down and Out Books, celebrating 6 years of award-winning crime fiction. And you can find Down and Out Books at www.downandoutbooks.com. Until next time, this is Greg Barth with Noir on the Radio. And Noir on the Radio is a copyrighted podcast solely owned by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC.